All right, Mick Metzer, CEO and founder of Esto Group. Thank you very much for having me over today in your office so we can talk a bit about the business model of Esto Group, the lending business, risk management, and also a bit about the financials. Before we start off, maybe you can elaborate a bit on your personal background. It's the first time we see each other today, obviously. And I also know it's your podcast debut. So what are some other information that our listeners or potential listeners could figure out about you?
Yeah, thanks for having me. So my name is Mick Metzer. And I founded Esto in 2017. And before that, I was in finance industry. So I started in investment banking. So in Estonia, there was this kind of like a bond house. They're called Redgate Capital. And I was straight out of university, went to Redgate. And I was kind of like thrown into rather many bond, fundraisers. And I really liked that. And also in Redgate, I guess that we started to do also non-bank lending companies bonds. And I really kind of like saw the industry from that point. I really liked it. And kind of it was first time for me to understand that there's kind of like this non-banking lending market, which is really active, and especially in the Baltics. But later, after Redgate, I moved to the biggest private equity fund in the Baltics, and now also in the new Nordics and Poland. They are called BaltCap. And in there, I also like had a very wide view, not only now as an analyst, but kind of, sitting into supervisory board meetings, helping to fundraise new funds, new strategies, helping the back office, all of the financial reporting and everything. So kind of like a very wide view. And during BaltCap, I also kind of like saw an opportunity that in the Baltics, the e-commerce sector and basically the digitalization tools were really expanding. And in BaltCap, I started to think about what if to create like this new, very automated fintech. But I didn't start it right away, and after BaltCap, after 2 years, I also went into this a company called Trigon Capital. And Trigon Capital was also like an investment bank, but also like this public equities investor. I think that they are the only one in the region with the official mandate of the Norway Sovereign Wealth Fund. And they are heavy in investing into Eastern Europe equities, but also they had some alternative investment side of the company. And again, I worked together with Joachim Helenius. So Joachim Helenius is kind of like in Estonia, this old school banker, everybody knows him. He came to Estonia from London, from Citibank, and when the Estonian biggest bank, like Hansa Bank at the time, now Swedbank, I guess Joachim helped to put together like these big bank funding rounds, and then he established Trigon Capital. But I was in there as well. But after Trigon, then I already founded Esto. And as I mentioned, then the reason why we founded Esto was that there was two significant market trends. So the extreme speed of e-commerce growth plus the speed of which the digitalization tools were available in the market. So that means that in lending or finance business, you want to have like authentication, which is fully automated, preferably centralized by the governments. You want to have the access in real time to all the biggest debt registries. You want to buy like negative data, you want to buy positive data, you want to have like a good banking infrastructure, meaning that a lot of the scoring is being done from the bank statements, so you don't want to collect the bank statements. You want to have everything like automatically done, connected with the banks. And when we started in 2017, then The technology was there to get like this automated bank statement data exchange, but it even went better after the implementation of the PSD2 regulation in Europe, where the banks really needed to open up their infrastructure for the third parties, not only to scrape the bank statements, but to also get it from like a machine readable format from the banks. So it was really important. But we started in Estonia 2017, and the initial idea was very simple. We wanted to create the most simplest automatic credit payment option in the online e-commerce. You know, as the starts are, then you don't have no money, you don't have no technology, you don't have any merchants. And when you go to the merchants, then you say that you have the money and technology. When you go to the investors, you say you have the technology and the merchants. So we started, and but for us, since we did not raise equity capital in the beginning, then our goal was from the initial start point to get to profitability as fast as we can. So we did not pay any salaries for, you know, first years, and we were trying to make it work. I partnered with some talented Estonian technology people. So one of my co-founders is Mikk Mihkel Nurgas, and he was there as kind of as a full stack engineer, building the back end, front end, everything. Basically it went from there. So we integrated the first merchants, we started to issue the first loans, and as we grew, then we saw like, and we learned a lot, we saw market opportunity that we don't want to only be like this automated payment option for credit solution. At the time, nobody was really like calling it buy now pay later. It was more of like this online installment loan. But we saw an opportunity that a lot of consumers were started to use the solution and stay in Esto ecosystem. So we wanted to expand the offering of products, not only for the connection with the merchants, but also after. So when the consumer has used Esto, use some buy now, pay later to buy like an iPhone, then later on we wanted them to have something to stay connected with Esto. So we created actually this dual view of Esto ecosystem. So one is called Esto Business and one is called Esto Personal. And Esto Business, all of the businesses, online merchants, nowadays you don't have to even be like a merchant, you can connect with Esto Business account and you can use Esto's, you know, payment solutions. We have now debit payments, we have card payments, we have buy now pay later schedules, we have longer term installment loans, we are affiliating working capital loans for the business partners, and we just recently launched Esto Deals, which is kind of like a marketing service for the business partners. So if they have something to sell, maybe they have some iPhones, or maybe they have some even like massages or hairdressing or something like that, and they want to offer a good discount, then they can do it via Esto Deals, and it's kind of like an advertisement network. And on the second side, on the other side, is Esto Personal. So we use Esto Business connections. In the Baltics, we have already now like over 5,000, and they are continuously every day bringing us new consumers, and we convert the users also to Esto Personal, and in Esto Personal they can get access to a lot of shopping offers from Esto Deals, from general all the shops, discount offers, loyalty points, they get access to revolving credit line, they get access to a wide variety of consumer loan schedules such as car loan, small loan, travel loan, renovation loan, and they stay with Esto. And maybe a little bit more, then in 2021 we decided that we wanted to expand out of Estonia and to cover all Baltics. And the reason for that was that if not everybody knows the Baltics, but Baltic economies are rather similar. So if you walk in Tallinn, if you walk in Riga or Vilnius, you see the same shops, you see the same brands, and the bigger brands have their like headquarters in mainly one country, and they are running those platforms in a kind of like a centralized way. So we saw an opportunity that all of the biggest merchants that we have already in Estonia, when we create solutions that we can offer also Latvia and Lithuania, then we can easily extend the partnership and have this pan-Baltic coverage. For our business, the start is rather slow, because in the beginning, when you enter a new market, you need to lay the ground foundation, meaning that you need to connect with one merchant, second merchant, 100 merchants, 200 merchants. But it's a high entry barrier business. So if you have like a technology or business model that is attractive for the business partners in the market, then it's a very low churn business. So I believe that the amount of merchants that have disconnected with Esto over the years, and I'm not kidding, it's I think below 20. So it's a very low churn, considering that you have like over like 5,000 partners. Because it takes time to convince the merchant, it takes time to make the integration, it takes time to train the physical shops, to put up the signs in the physical shops and everything. And in Lithuania, Latvia, we have seen that the trend has really going in the same step that we saw in Estonia. So initially we get the merchants, we see the amount of consumers increase, we see the amount of conversions from buy now, pay later products to other products, and it's kind of like creating like the single market networking effect. And now in 2024, we're really happy with the growth in Latvia and Lithuania. So Estonia is extremely profitable. Estonia monthly profit is around like 1 million euros already. Latvia and Lithuania showed us year to year from 2022 to 2023 4x revenue growth, and we are projecting to actually even increase that this year, and the trend is good. So to summarize, Esto is focused in the Baltics. We feel that Baltics is a very attractive market for a consumer lending company, because when you compare Baltics to other companies in Europe, then if you look at the default rates versus the yields that the consumers are paying, I guess that we believe that it's one of the most attractive ratios, because the Baltic consumer is really, really paying. And in this region, even if you look at like banking yields and return of equities and everything, then in this region the yields are very high. So Esto is betting in the Baltics, and at the moment we see like a really good network coming together.
All right, thanks for the elaborate answer on your personal background, but then obviously this ties in already into a lot of questions I had later on about Esto, the origin story, and also the business model, which I think is now better understood. Maybe going a step back, you mentioned co-founder Mick Mikael. What is the current shareholder structure of Esto Group? Who's the UBO? Is it yourself, or what's the structure like?
So Esto has six main shareholders. So it's three co-founders and three investors. And everybody is Estonian entrepreneurs.
Okay, and who is the UBO?
There is no single UBO. Let's say, roughly speaking, everybody sits around 20%, around that.
Of the co-founders?
Everybody. It's like, 15, somebody has 10, somebody has 20. So it's a very kind of like good mix of with different skills of people.
All right. Going back then to the business model, as you explained, the collaboration with the merchants, but obviously you also have lending products. Can you say your revenue, how it splits between your B2B and your B2C market?
Yeah, so the primary revenue, the majority of the revenue comes from B2C. If we need to take some ratios, then the B2B revenue is around 10%, a little bit less. But at the moment, we have initiatives, and this year and the coming years, we are a little bit focusing more on bringing in products that bring us non-credit revenue. And you know, one example is the launched Esto Deals. There are other examples in the works, for instance, like affiliating loan insurance and product insurance for our consumers. But at the moment, it's 90%, a little bit more, is from lending activities and from B2C.
Mm-hmm. Quite significant then. Can you elaborate on the lending products that you offer?
Yeah. So the main lending product is Credit Line. And it's a revolving credit line up to 60 months, and the consumer usually gets assigned a limit that they can use in a very flexible manner. So they can make like a withdrawal, any amount they want under that credit line. And there's a specific principal repayment every month, plus all accrued fees on the previous month. So let's say that you take like 100 euros on the 1st of June, you pay back 2nd of June, then you actually pay for like one day. So that's the major product. And the second, in terms of like portfolio, are all the buy now, pay later loans that we are servicing in all Baltic countries. So, you know, we connect with a wide variety. I believe that we even have sellers that are only selling socks using Esto checkout solution. But we do have like the biggest, like, you know, Apple, Ideal sellers, Sportland, all the biggest brands. So very wide coverage. So the buy now, pay later is the second biggest, and the third biggest credit product for us is these consumer loans, which kind of are like complementary products for Credit Line, but they are more dedicated for a more specific bigger purchases, like for instance like car loans or bigger renovation products or bigger travels or something like that.
Okay, interesting. If I research correctly, I was surprised the maximum amount of those loan prices for my thing was quite low. Like when I researched correctly, Credit Line I think was 4,000 euros max, and small loans 5,000, is that correct?
That's correct, yeah. And one key point to notice about Esto is that we have at this moment of time a user base a little bit over 550,000. So it's for the Baltic countries, it's a very good result. And in terms of risk management as well, we really look into how we segregate and offer limits based on client profiles and based on their behavior inside the ecosystem. Meaning that when you get connected with Esto, obviously you will have your own credit score assigned, automatic scoring done based on bank statements, default registries and everything. But you're still a new user for Esto ecosystem. So when you start using it more, you make repayments, you know, show you're active, then there's a gradual increase of limits. And the way Esto ecosystem works is that it's really user convenient, meaning that you might have a buy now, pay later or credit line or consumer loan or whatever. You still have like a single monthly user central invoice of all Esto ecosystem. So you get it on the second day of the month. The payment date is on the 15th, and you just pay your single amount, or you have like a direct debit with a bank that takes it from your bank account. So it's really easy to use. And we have seen that it also helps with consumer behavior, payment behavior. So it's really good in Esto ecosystem.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. So that means through good repayment behavior, borrowers are able to also access larger credit lines the next time around.
Yeah.
Okay. It's an interesting concept. So do you know by heart how big the loan amount is for certain customers, like how they leveled up, let's say, over the years?
Mm-hmm. So to say that we don't go over 10k, and there can be customers that that have very good payment behavior, opened up limits up to 10k, But still, Esto is mostly focused on this wider distribution of credit risk across portfolio. So we don't really want to create a scenario of like, for instance, some local Baltic banks are doing, that they are identifying like a good characteristic consumer and they are topping them off with like 20k, 25k. Mm. But for us, it's not a strategy. So to tell you some figures, then on average, the credit utilization per consumer is below like 1,000 euros in Esto ecosystem. And it is mainly done and managed purely credit risk management way. So for us, it's helps us to, you know, reduce the credit losses and makes the company more profitable.
Mm. What is the rate for repeated customers?
60%. So and we just put together those numbers end of last year, and the metric was calculated whether there was more than one transaction in a single calendar year. So that was the retention metric.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Obviously, the customer base, more than 500,000, 550,000, that's quite a lot. Now, you said you're betting on the Baltics. Do you see still a lot of growth then in that market? Or how do you evaluate the situation in the Baltics? Or do you think at one point it's inevitable to cross borders then?
So at the moment, we feel that there's plenty of job to do in the Baltics. And when we look at Latvia and Lithuania, then they are bigger countries than Estonia. So overall, the Baltics combined is, you know, a little bit over 6 million people. And in Estonia, there's like, you know, 1.3, 1.4. We have done now, starting from 2021 second half, a lot of investments into Latvia and Lithuania. And in the market, we also did a lot of these market entry subsidies. So a lot of the buy now, pay later loans were offered with a really good conditions and good commissions for the merchants to create like the initial network. And now we started to really see this scaling up. And to answer it shortly, then we are betting in the Baltics. There's plenty to do, and Esto balance sheet at the moment is you know, over 70 million, and I guess that there's hundreds of millions of portfolio to cover in the Baltics.
Hmm. That was exactly my next question about the outstanding portfolio size. I think it was 63 million by the end of last year, if I saw it correctly from the annual report.
Yeah.
Okay, and those 70 million, well, we can get to the funding structure in a second. Maybe overall, the financials, I reviewed the annual report. You raised 40 million last year, revenue 24 million, net profit 3 million. Lately, you raised 20 million from Multitude Bank. Congrats on that. Can you talk a bit about the overall financial structure of the company and how you're set up?
Yeah, sure. So From the beginning, Esto has been funded with debt, and basically all the equity capital that is in the balance sheet is self-generated. So when we put together Esto funding, then diversification is definitely a key word for us. And to make an example why diversification is important is that for instance, when there was a start of pandemic and a lot of lending companies that were connected with Mintos and really heavily dependent on Mintos cash flows, and when Mintos investor community showed some kind of slowdown, no new money coming down, then a lot of like lending companies faced difficulties in repayments. But that wasn't the case for Esto, because we used our at the time we had good outstanding banking credit facility, so we used that, and we did not go into the pending. But coming back to the funding side, then we do have a mix of equity, subordinated capital, subordinated to all external senior debt. We have banking facilities. We have launched a couple of corporate bonds. We are connected with peer-to-peer, and We are connected with one of the most known Scandinavian and Baltic family offices. So I think that's the majority of the funding.
Mm. Can you talk also about, let's say, the split that you have, the percentage for each funding source, and maybe in particular also how you handle peer-to-peer lending, if you have, let's say, certain thresholds that you apply?
Yeah. So roughly speaking, then we don't really want a single funding source to go over like 30%. Ideally, it should be like 25%. And in terms of like the equity management, then at the moment the equity ratio inside of the group is a little bit over 22%. But our aim is actually to grow it to 25% and keep it there. So that means that last years as well, we have seen kind of like a heavy increase in the loan portfolio because, you know, we grew like three markets together. But now this year, when we started to really focus more on profitability, we see this equity ratio increasing as well. So in terms of peer-to-peer, then again, it's the same strategy. We really don't want to go over like these thresholds of that a single funding source is taking over like 30% of the total balance sheet. And I believe that Mintos exposure is less than that at the moment.
But still quite significant, because last time I looked, it was 17 million, I think, the outstanding portfolio Mintos.
Around that, then.
So it is already from 70 million, or let's say a fourth, 25%, so quite high.
And actually, that is one of the reasons that why we extended the partnership with the bank as well. So to get more diversification in.
Now you're on Mintos since September 2019. What can you share in general about your collaboration with Mintos so far?
I think it has been very good. I think that over time, Esto cooperation and communication with Mintos has been flowing good. And what we have seen is that Mintos has hugely developed over the years. So we started with Mintos when Mintos wasn't licensed. Now Mintos is licensed. We have worked with Mintos business development, with Mintos IT over a long period of time. So just recently we launched a new market, Lithuania, Esto-Lithuania on Mintos. And for that, our IT teams collaborated and they created like this uploading mechanism, which is called Forward Flow. So not a standard. And now we are extending this forward flow to Estonia. We are trying fractional bonds with Mintos. So from Esto's side, they have been a good partner.
Do you look, now you mentioned the bond structure, do you plan on exposing, on increasing your exposure on Mintos, or do you also see other platforms that might contribute to your funding sources?
Yeah, so never say never. So we have not really thought about connecting like a significant portion to other lending, like these crowdfunding platforms. But already today, Mintos is not the only one. So we are connected with Crowd Credit from Japan. And Crowd Credit has been financing our Lithuanian operations. But in minority, so the amounts there are not too significant. But again, I'm not saying that Esto is not going to be connected with other platforms. I guess that it depends on commercial conditions and whether we see value in that, whether they can bring additional like investor community that has not seen Esto before, and all different factors need to be considered there.
Now that you mentioned the bond structure on Mintos, what's the benefit for Esto going that way? And can you talk about the structure of the offering?
Yeah. So the corporate bonds are good for a lending company to have as a balancing effect next to the peer-to-peer, because the peer-to-peer is a good and flexible source of liquidity. But when you upload loans to peer-to-peer, then you have maturity pressure, meaning that, you know, normally when you do like a corporate bond or you sign a direct funding agreement, then you have like locked in capital for many years. But with peer to peer, it's more of like it's more revolving. So any time you upload a loan to peer to peer, then when a consumer is repaying the loan, you need to return the principal, which would not be the case with these other instruments. So these corporate bond issuances are a good balancing factor for that, and that's why we launched the first corporate bond issue in the early, we did 2021 autumn, our inaugural bond issue. And for that reason, to have like more diversification, to have locked in capital, the first bond was issued 3 years. And now actually the bond maturity in the autumn is coming. And after that, we have launched other bonds, and we have outstanding bond framework, which is a 100 million bond framework. It's set up through Baltic Nasdaq, and we can issue tranches from that underlying framework. So it's not, obviously fully utilized, the framework, but we do have launched and outstanding bonds from the 100 million framework. And the way the corporate bonds for Esto are set up is it's quite standard, meaning that there's all the bond issuing and registration is done through Nasdaq. Esto has been using an underwriter investment bank called Signet, and for all the bonds we have a collateral agent across Baltics. They are called Trinity, they are Pan-Baltic law office. So it's really straightforward, and all the investors get their quarterly coupon payments through Nasdaq, and very straightforward.
And the bonds that you want to offer on Mintos, can you talk about details, what the offering will entail in terms of interest rate, loan term?
So we're going to issue a tranche from this 100 million bond framework. So it's really straightforward. And we're going to use Signet Bank, and Mintos shall be one of the investors in the tranche. And the bond offering shall have definitely double-digit yields. At the moment, I think that I can't really comment because we don't have, I think, the final agreement with Mintos side. But to say that in the past months, we have been working together with Mintos and the regulator to register the prospectus with Mintos regulator in order to issue the bond. And everything has been going smoothly. So we hope that at least like inside of this June, the first tranche will be issued there.
Actually, Mintos was undergoing licensing a couple years ago. Would be interesting for me to hear the lender perspective, to which extent has, let's say, the formalities and the bureaucratic act in cooperating with Mintos changed since Mintos is a licensed entity?
Yeah, so there's significant impact, and I'm not saying it's like a negative thing. So what we have seen is that a lot of like legal teams, risk teams, they are inquiring and like monthly reports, quarterly reports, AML views, that's all of the business side. Then other side is that when Mintos got licensed, then these underlying uploading mechanisms needed to have like an update as well. So, Mintos started to put together the notes, stuff like that. So the licensing actually, when you were like a lending company, it influenced us quite a lot, and we had to do like investments as well. And obviously these all of the loan originators need to have their own prospectuses that are gonna be and are confirmed with the Mintos regulator. That's not only Mintos putting it together, that's also loan originator. But we did not really mind because we really do believe that this helps the whole market. And when Mintos is doing such, good work in the diligence side and the risk monitoring and everything, then it makes the platform safer for everybody and more longer standing. So that's all fine.
Are you personally a guy that invests in peer-to-peer lending, maybe Mintos or any other platforms?
I'm personally not there.
What's your general view on peer-to-peer lending, not just, let's say, from your business perspective, but as a whole? As you mentioned, the non-bank lending aspect was one of the key things that triggered also you to start Esto. How do you perceive peer-to-peer lending, and maybe with a focus on the Baltics as well?
Yeah, I'm really a fan of peer-to-peer lending, and I guess that the thing is that in the historic view, these kinds of alternative asset classes were only like accessible for these wealthy and high net individuals in the regions. And if I look at consumer lending industry and if I look at the collateral structure, I really do believe it's one of the safest forms of investments, because let's make, you know, comparisons that you might have like real estate investments and everything, but let's say that you invest into some development and there was a crook developer or something did not get built or anything, you know, it's really hard to get some value out of the collateral. But if you have like a consumer lending company that is pledging their underlying consumer loans to you, then you get a sense of if something is wrong in a really short time period, and if you know, let's say that the company, lending company, is doing something wrong, they are going bankrupt, then you either, you know, can let the consumer loans roll out to the collector bank account, or you can dispose the consumer loan portfolio to any market participant that is interested in, you know, acquiring portfolios. So there's huge value in the collateral, and you know, in many cases these ratios like advance rates are not like, you know, 1-to-1. It's lending companies usually need to keep like their own equity position in the loans that are being uploaded. So coming back to your question, then I look peer-to-peer like these investments into consumer loan companies and portfolios in a beneficial for both sides, because on one side it's access to these alternative investments with good yields, good collateral, but on the other side it's access to capital in a relatively simple manner. And when you have like the technology integrations and everything done, then it's mainly like a treasury management of uploads and yield management and stuff like that, but you don't need to have like this extensive bond put together and roadshow and 100,000 cost of legal fees and everything. So it's very good for the industry.
All right, thanks for sharing your view on this. Last bigger part for me would be risk management. Can you share in terms of your loan products how you operate with your underwriting process?
Yeah, so for us it's simple, and it's not only statistical scoring, but it's many pillars. So number one is that we really want that all of the customer acquisition that is being done is being done through stores, through actual purchase of products. Because there's a huge difference whether a consumer is entering into your ecosystem whilst seeing a Get Cash advertisement on the street, on a dumpster, on a TV, or when they go to the store and maybe they even did not think about getting a credit to buy an iPhone, but they saw a flexible opportunity to buy now, pay later 3 months or buy now, pay later 6 months. So it's a totally different kind of like a user profile. And even if the user profile is not so different in some cases, then the psychological connection for consumers that are tying together credit with some clear, like a physical product, that has shown that it has a very good impact on the payment behavior. So that's number one. The number first pillar for us is that the customer acquisition. So the customer acquisition channel is actually with a very big influence on repayment behavior. Then the second pillar what we have is that the underlying data needs to be verified. So that means that luckily we are operating in the Baltics, so that when a consumer enters, so the authentication, it's not only, you know, write here your name or something like that, but we have like an extensive authentication, and it can vary, but on average, the consumer needs to verify them with like smart ID or mobile ID or bank ID, and depending on the country. But if there are some indicators of like this fraudulent characteristic, then we also have like this document and facial recognition. So, but this is more against like these identity fraud. So that's number one. Number two is that when you get like data, then from the regulatory side, you do need to ask application forms. You need to ask what's your income, what's your liabilities, what's your dependents, what's your planned increase of financial liabilities, what's your address and stuff like that. But our motto has been that, you know, we get the data, we compare the application data with other verified sources, but we don't really believe what the consumer is saying to us, because depending on the operating country, is it Estonia, is it Lithuania, we want to buy as much verified data. So in Lithuania, the situation actually is the best. In Lithuania, Lithuanian central bank is collecting not only the payment defaults and data from that, but also all the outstanding credit liabilities of a consumer. So when you have like a mortgage or consumer loan, every market participant is reporting that back to Bank of Lithuania, and you can buy that data. So the verified income, it can come from, to make a couple of examples, it's Estonia, it's like pension center, tax agency, and across the whole markets it's basically bank statements. And bank statements we get from, as I said, the consent. So the consumer actually doesn't see any friction in giving us the bank statement. They give the consent, and we through third party we are connected with all Baltic and external banks, and we get the data in a machine readable format, and also in a categorized way, so we know that what are incomes, what are liabilities, what are like recurring monthly, you know, expenditure and stuff like that. Plus then we have like our own filters of data analysis, and there's a decision. So that was kind of like the second pillar, meaning that data needs to be verified. We don't believe the consumer. And thirdly, it's gradual risk management. So that means that when you get like a new consumer, then obviously if the risk and the potential credit losses are significantly higher when you are a new customer. So that's why we correspond the credit risk mechanisms together with the limit management. Because on one side, if you're more well-adversed in the risk side, then the risk departments are looking at metrics such as, you know, first payment default or amount of days late of first payment, or what is like 30 days past due default and stuff like that. So, but that doesn't actually give you much sense of what has been like the impacts of financial losses. So you need to always correspond of what was the monetary value for how many consumers that were like, you know, first payment defaulting and everything. And that means that the limit management is very important. And the limit management for Esto is not looking only on a product-based, we look on a consumer-based. So as I mentioned, then we have many products. We have buy now, pay laters. You can have many buy now, pay laters. You can have like a IKEA furniture set. You can have an iPhone or a computer, stuff like that. You can have a credit line. But it all corresponds to under your single central credit limit. And you can, you know, increase the exposure there. In some months you can have like a higher credit line exposure. You pay that back. You can get the buy now, pay later. But it all is influenced. And the way you are getting the limit is that the limit is increasing gradually over time. You know, the first step that you need to prove to Esto is that you are not a fraudster. And fraudster to Esto is not only like the criminal fraud, but fraud for Esto is also getting a loan with no intention of making a repayment anytime. It doesn't have to be like an identity theft or anything, so that as we classify as fraud. And after that, yeah, we do have customers that have been in the ecosystem from 2017, have not shown any kind of like payment errors. We have customers that have had some payment difficulties, have gotten like a payment leave product, returned, So it's a continuous management. So I think this is in short of risk scoring.
Appreciate. Thank you very much. Now that you mentioned also a couple of performance indicators that you don't always look at too closely, but can you share like what is the current performance of the loan book you have right now?
So firstly, the loan book, what we do is that we don't want to keep delinquent portfolio in the balance sheet. So what we do in the across operating regions is that when the loan application gets 90 days past due, then we are selling it off to forward flow partners. So we have different partners in Estonia, Latvia, Lithuania, and this is one of the core mechanisms that we use in order to manage the risks. And up to the 90 days, we have like local teams in all Baltic countries that are doing reminders. We have automatic reminders and physical, you know, caller reminders and everything. And our teams are also trying to work together with the consumers prior to the sale. Like maybe you need to have like a payment leave, or maybe you would like to refinance on a lower monthly payment, and kind of like work together. But if there's no like cooperation available, then we sell it to the partner. So taking that into account, then we see these losses, like IFRS 9 calculations of net losses to net portfolio, that those have been in a very good level. So that has never been over 2%, and in the last year it has been significantly lower than 2%. But that means that there is very minimal amount of risk in the book. All of these monthly sales that are disposals of portfolio, so you know, we sell, we write off the book, we get the sale income. These are all recovered on a monthly, quarterly, annual basis in the profit and loss statement, and it's really straightforward. So in a lending business, obviously you need to balance the both worlds. You need to balance the revenue plus the losses, meaning that, you know, if you want to have the losses as 0%, then you might be cannibalizing your revenue. But you need to understand like what works for the financial covenants and for your company and your growth strategy. So it's kind of like a balancing out, meaning that maybe in some cases we are willing to take over more risks in some new markets in order to get like the better market penetration. In some cases we really focus on bringing the risk down, like in Estonia we have been really configuring the risk scoreboards and putting more focus on the quality and bringing down a little bit the loan losses. But overall we are very happy with the portfolio quality in Estonia.
That sounds incredible. Just to repeat, so the historic quota of non-performing loans is below 2%.
Yeah.
Is there any differences from the countries that you can tell, or is it just minor percentages?
The countries are similar. So there are slight differences between Estonia versus Latvia and Lithuania. But those are the differences because Estonia is a more mature market. So Estonia is from 2017, and there's an intrinsic risk of when you're getting so much new customers in a new market, then you need to learn and you need to balance it out. But the difference is not so significant, so rather similar.
Okay. Another question that you answered already is if you do the recovery yourself, or as you just explained, you sell those claims to collection companies. Can you talk about at which discount you sell those claims?
I cannot say like exact figures because it's a really competitive market, but it's all countries combined, we are able to get over 60%.
60.
Yeah,
60%. Okay, 60. All right.
There have been times when we were selling like 78%, but those buying companies are not anymore in the market.
And on the other side, obviously the returns. Can you talk about the returns you can generate from your loan book and what the margins are?
So when we look at internally, we look at IRR. So and first of all, in the Baltics, all countries are regulated. So the regulation hit like Baltic countries in many, many years ago. And in each country, we have an APR cap. So in Estonia, the APR cap is calculated twice a year. It calculates 3 times of the average of uncollateralized consumer loans issued by the market participants. So the majority is by the banks. So Estonia, the rate is at the moment like 50%. Latvia, the rate is similar, around 50%. And Lithuania, there's a rate up to 70%, but it's a little bit different because they are calculating in Lithuania also like the cap on fees and interest, plus overall Lithuanian setup is not favoring long-term loans, meaning that the credit cost cannot be higher than the principal amount. So if you go to like 60-month loans or something like that, then you cannot really do that. So there's differences. Esto's book on average, including all products, IRR is a little bit over 40%. So we do have like a wide variety. We have 0% loans, we have low IRR loans, we have high IRR loans. So, but the mixture is around 44 IRR. And then when I look at primary revenue generation of loan book outstanding on a monthly basis, so for the first quarter the ratio was around like 3.3%. So let's say that we have some 65 million outstanding, it generates us on average over 3% of primary revenue, not including the revenue that we are getting from the delinquent portfolio sales.
Hmm. All right. Thanks for sharing those insights. Do you think in terms of risk management, there's anything left to say?
I think that in terms of risk management, it's 90% more to say, but because when you really do put together those data models and probability of default scores and everything, so it's a very sophisticated thing. Hmm. But I think that the main things got said. So the main pillars of acquisition channel, verified data, and gradual limit management, and it's the most important stuff. So we always say that with the business model, acquisition channel, verified data, you kind of determine around like 90% of the payment behavior, and the last 10% can be optimized if you have like a bad data models and bad risk guys. Then maybe you don't optimize the last mile. But if you have very good risk guys, very good data guys, then you can also optimize the last 10%.
Hmm. All right. And lastly, outlook, the future, what's going on at Esto as far as you can publicly share? What are the things investors can expect from the company moving forward?
So this year, it's on profitable growth. So we decided at the end of last year, when we were putting together the plans for Esto, then the markets really do want to see increased profitability. So I believe that the last quarter for Esto was our 22nd consecutive profitable quarter, but we saw an opportunity that we need to increase the profitability ratio. So we really started to focus on the loan distribution, like can we cut some kind of like free campaigns or like subsidies, and to be more frugal. We looked at operations, we made things more efficient, and the first quarter now, we just released the results, was the best quarter of Esto's history. So we did like a quarterly net profit of 1.1 million, but taking into account already that we did a single monthly net profit record in March, which was 550,000. And we are seeing already in April, May, and continuously this trend is going to increase. So the last year's net profit of around 3 million euros, we are significantly wanting that to be overachieved, and purely continuing on the profitable growth plan in the Baltics, because in the last year, especially in 2022-2023, we were kind of reorganizing Esto from a single market company to a multi-market company, which means that you kind of need to rebuild the organization and do the technological things. You need to open offices. Now we have like 5 offices in Eastern Europe. We have a team of 75 people, and even though we are operating very efficiently, when we compare like companies that have also multi-market like operations, like then our like employee level is still like 2-3 times less than them. So I think we have been operating very efficiently. But then again, yeah, we needed to do those investments in 22-23, also investments into point of sale, and now focusing more on this created network and profitability. So I think that's the main message.
All right, perfect. That's a wrap, I would say. Thank you, Mick, for your answers. I much appreciate your insights on Esto.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.